Welcome to the Pain-Free Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, Dana Jones. I am a certified personal trainer, and I'm here to help you achieve your fitness goals without pain. In each episode, I'll share tips and strategies that will help you stay safe and pain-free while you're working out. I'll also interview experts in the field of fitness and pain management. So if you're ready to learn how to stay active and pain-free, then subscribe to the Pain-Free Athlete Podcast today. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Pain-Free Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, Dana Jones. So I am going to share part two with my conversation with Donica about all things body. So stay tuned and enjoy. The point of all of this is that listening to our body and listening to our needs is very important. And what I wanted to kind of do is go back to where we were talking about intuitive eating, and how hard do you think it is, or in your observation, is it for people to really tune in to their body, and kind of where does that lead us to if there's such a disconnection? Like, how do you get that connection back, and how does it, you know, play with the intuitive eating piece? Is that complicated enough or what?
Two, three-part question. I mean, it's, yeah. So just going with the idea of how do we get back to intuitive eating? If we know from eating disorder specialists, for example, that that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be paying attention to what our bodies are telling us in terms of when to eat, how much to eat, what to eat. And yet, you know, like I've tried doing intuitive, I'm actively trying to do intuitive eating. And what inevitably happens is that I have a bunch of automatic thoughts that come up saying, no, you can't eat this thing that you want to eat right now because of something, you know, the media told me, something I saw in social media, or a friend told me, or, you know, somebody who's doing the Whole 30 right now, or doing keto right now, or whatever it is. There are just endless, it's like an endless dialogue that's going about what I should and shouldn't be eating. And how do I put that dialogue, or like quiet it a little bit so that I can hear what my own body is saying to eat, like we do when we're little kids, right?
Right.
Before we're taught to not do that anymore. Part of it is mindfulness, like from what I've heard. And like I said, I'm not an expert on this, but it really is mindfulness. So actually just doing meditations can help, because they force you, many of them will force you to sit there and just feel, tune in.
That sounds incredibly uncomfortable.
For a lot of people it is. And to be clear, it's not for everyone. Sometimes you need to start with some moving meditations. Like it can be rough. But yeah, sitting there and just like, you know, feeling the sensations. Where do I feel tension in my body? What does hunger actually feel like? You know, so you were talking about trauma and hunger signals, or just interoceptive signals in general. One of the things that can happen is if you are constantly told that your needs aren't good or aren't right, essentially, like your needs need to be put aside, you forget how to even perceive those needs. So like, and I have a great example of this family member of mine. If you ask her, are you hungry? She gets frustrated because she doesn't know. She doesn't ever know. She knows as soon as she puts a bite of food in her mouth, then she can start to sense it. But because of the like long-term effects of ignoring her internal signals, she can no longer judge that.
That's interesting. I had, I was reading a story and I can't remember where I read it, but this woman was talking about the fact, and I don't know if it's in the intuitive eating book or not, but about children you know, and she was talking about her son and said that he, you know, he was probably whatever, 8 months old, something like that. And so he's eating solid food, and her mother was feeding her son. And there was a point where he tapped out, right? So he, you know, she's like, here's the choo-choo, you know, whatever kind of thing. And he pursed his lips and kept them closed and then shook his head no, that he didn't want any more. And then her mother went into, you know, essentially trickery of, you know, let's go, you know, open, you know, doing the whole thing that we do. And what she was saying is that this is the first time that I noticed that you're telling somebody that you don't trust their intuition, you know, and she's like, at 8 months old, you're telling him like, I know you think you're full, but you're not. So let me, you know, because I think we've become obsessed with cleaning the plate.
Yes.
And that is, I mean, I grew up with that. And that is a weird thing. Like, I remember, you know, the first time I didn't clean my plate, like, and it was, you know, a few months ago, like it wasn't, you know, oh, back 20 years. It was like, no, literally, like, I felt like and I think also being poor, there is that belief that you can't waste, right? And, you know, and I'm not like unhoused poor, but I am, you know, of that paycheck to paycheck mode when I was younger, especially. And so then every bit of food was a gift, and I didn't want to waste a gift, and I didn't want to seem disrespectful. So I started like shoveling. And, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't necessarily catch up to you. But then eventually, you know, when Mother Nature takes over and your body systems start to slow because hormones and this and that and everything else, or also from all the trauma of, you know, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, right? Now it's sticking to me. But the weirdness was to walk away from the plate and just to go, you know, like, I'm full. And of course, it's about not putting so much on your plate, probably, right? Like, you know, that goes back, you know, and I played with like, oh, I'm just using like a small plate or, you know, whatever. And that's all bullshit, because you can pile as much food on a small plate as you can put on a big plate. But it's really about having an understanding of your body and being okay with throwing away food or not getting yourself so much, right? You know, I try to teach my kids that, like, when you're going through a buffet, don't jam all the food on there, because then you're not going to eat it. You're going to throw it away. And that's a waste, right? You should just get little bits and then you can go back if you want. And, you know, I guess what I was teaching them without it really understanding is that then you know you're full, right? If you're eating all little bits and you've finished the plate, right? By the time, you know, we're done chatting, you're drinking a little water, you're doing whatever, the message gets sent, right? I'm full, you're three quarters
delay,
full,
right?
There's a delay, as opposed to, you know, for instance, if you're sitting in front of a TV and you're engrossed in the TV show or movie or whatever you're watching and you keep eating, you know, the signal gets sent and it's not there. So
you're not paying attention to it. Yeah. So that's like, you know, what in they call that in the intuitive eating book, the unconscious eating process, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a big piece, and what I'm finding, at least in my experience, is that a lot of my clients are coming with all these disconnects, right? You know, aside from the fact that I think it's more comfortable for people to actually share their trauma. You know, back when I was a kid, you know, it was like, stuff that shit down. Don't tell anybody, you know,
that.
Yeah, you don't want to be weak, you know, that kind of stuff. And now people are sharing and you're hearing about like the very weird things that, you know, parents have done in the past with their children around food. But then I'm also seeing these, because I deal with athletes, I'm seeing very extreme eating behaviors because it's the trend. And so I guess, you know, for you, it's like, for my question for you is like, how, aside from mindfulness, like, how do you get back, you know, knowing how much fuel you need to, you know, participate, or how much fuel you need to get through your day? Like, how, you know, how do you know? Like, you know, it'd be cool if we had a little, you know, meter, like, oh, okay, you're three quarters full, that's enough.
Right. Yeah. It'd be so great if we had some sort of external message that could just tell us, right? Because getting back in touch with the internal message is so hard. It takes time, I think, is that's, and again, I want to say I'm not an expert, but what I read in this book really, really just rang true for me. And one of the things that the authors talk about is giving yourself lots of time to experiment with this. And not only, so I think it, you have to think about it as really a whole, like, you know, a full process. It's not just before you eat the food, right? It's after you eat the food. How are you feeling? One of the things they talk about is, like, you know, people may keep telling you, like, green beans are really good for you. You should eat them because they have fiber and whatever else they have in them. If green beans make you gassy and feel terrible afterwards, listen to your body.
Right.
If there's another vegetable that makes you feel really good, eat that. And it's really just that, like, giving it time to, like, reacquaint yourself with what makes you feel good. And they even say, you know, like, if there's a food that you're depriving yourself of consistently, what ends up happening, there's this cycle in psychology. And I think it's called, like, binging and restraining or something like that. Essentially, the idea is that you withhold something from yourself. And then ultimately, inevitably, the craving rises during this withholding period. And then at some point, you binge on whatever that is. And this can apply to so many things in life, right?
But it really applies. Technology.
Yeah. Oh, technology, any behavior. Like, this is like an addiction. This is just an addiction cycle, essentially, right? You're depriving yourself. And then you go and you binge on the thing, and then you feel guilt and shame. And then you go through another cycle. And so what the authors talk about is to interrupt that cycle, for example, is to allow yourself to have whatever that food is. You really want to eat Cheetos? Always have Cheetos available. And what you'll find is when you are doing this process of intuitive eating, you'll go and you'll eat the Cheetos, right? And the assignment is you eat the Cheetos mindfully. You enjoy mm-hmm. them. You enjoy every bite. You taste the salt. You taste the fattiness.
The cheese.
Yeah, the cheesiness.
Cheese dust.
Right, the cheese dust. Like, eat all the crumbs off your hands, you know? Get that cheese dust off your index finger. You know, gross, like, licking style. Like, do it all. You know, enjoy the crunch. Like, enjoy the feeling and the experience of eating that food. And usually when you actually do that and you sit down and you enjoy the experience, the textures, the smells, you know, the sounds, all of it, you generally tend to eat less of the foods. But again, the authors always talk about, it's not focused on how much you're eating.
Right.
Right. But also, you know, if you're not eating it consciously, what you'll notice is you'll eat a lot of it, and then afterwards you'll feel yucky.
Yep.
Right? Because those foods don't make us feel good if we eat a lot of them. We eat a little bit, we feel fine. And so eventually, in this process of, like, allowing yourself to enjoy, then paying attention to how you feel afterwards, you just develop it, it's you're developing a new relationship with food.
I think that the worst part about all of this, or hearing that, because you did put it in a very nice, clean way, is that our society does that with everything. Like, we diet everything. Like, we have dry January. We have, like, all the, like, we literally, like,
November.
Right? I mean, it's just all, like, all the time, you know, and we're getting to the end of the year. And I hate it because it's usually when I get the most calls, because people are like, you know, new year, new me, you know, kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, goodness. But we've, you know, I've dealt with this with my students, is that there's a lot of, you know, because things are so frowned upon, right? You know, it's like, if you go and you eat a whole cake, people are going to judge you and they're going to look at you. So then, you know, that's what starts the secret eating. Right. You know, just all these things. So my kids are, you know, vaping secretly. They're doing, you know, everything's a secret. And I think it's like perpetuating the addiction.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And it's, you know, there's just so many things now because, you know, they're not allowed to have alcohols, but they drink alcohol. And because it's like a small window of time that they're allowed to drink alcohol because maybe parents are out of town or, you know, they're sleeping over somebody's house, like they go crazy and then you have alcohol poisoning and you're in the ER or, you know.
Yeah, you know, moderation is such an underrated concept, I think, in terms of everything, right? And I remember, I got to say, like, I think my mom taught me this. And I got to give her credit. I got to like call her up and let her know that I'm grateful because I don't think I've told her this before. But one of the things that she used to talk about when we were growing up was that she thought Americans were really strange around alcohol. And kids, because my mom's Brazilian and her grandmother was an Italian immigrant to Brazil. Her mom was like full-blooded Italian. Her dad was like indigenous Brazilian and Portuguese. And they used to have these big dinners at her grandmother's Italian, you know, her grandmother's house, Italian style. And everybody would have wine. The kids would have wine. And I mean, for them, the wine was mixed with a little bit of juice.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no concept of this being some kind of horrific, like child abuse or anything like that. It was just like, we're all having wine. The kids, you know, probably shouldn't have so much alcohol, so we'll give them a little juice. And it was all just this, you know, the sense of moderation just was, you know, pervasive in her family, in terms of alcohol. And she noticed in the US that people were like, there was like one or the other, like either you didn't drink or you were like, you know, like a, just having a drink every day, alcoholic in meetings, right?
And, right.
And you see that a lot, just everywhere in culture and in food and in technology, like you were saying.
But there's also a lack of understanding because alcohol and I don't get along. You know, just I don't feel good when I drink a lot of it. And so, I don't know, it's been about probably 6 or 7 years, I made a conscious decision to not drink. And the level of harassment that I receive. And it's getting better now because, you know, like I like the taste of beer. I just didn't like the congestion and all the crap that went along with it. And I don't like being drunk. That's a whole other episode. But, you know, it's just, I don't like that feeling. And there are a lot of people that spent a lot of years convincing me that I just needed to let go, or maybe I just didn't have the right alcohol, you know, and like, it's weird. Like, you know, there's a good amount of peer pressure that kids feel, right? You know, for whatever it may be, you know, sex, drugs, you know, school, sports, all that kind of stuff. Like there's no, I thought like, oh, I'm going to cross that threshold and then people are going to leave me alone. And, there wasn't a stop, you know, it's like people really, you know, like, because I don't know if they felt like I was holier than now because I didn't drink. I don't know if it's because I live in wine country that people were like overtly offended that how could I live in such an area and not drink, you know, or whatever it is. But for a while there, it was very uncomfortable and it made me, you know, not want to go to social things. It made me not want to, you know, necessarily, you know, socialize with people. If I did, you know, had to go somewhere, I was like, oh, I'm just going to sit off in the corner and, yeah. You know, or like, I felt like I had a lie and say, you know, well, you know, I would say like, oh, alcohol and I don't get along. And then I'd let people decide, you know, it was like, oh, she's got a problem, you know, but it's okay for me not to drink if I have a problem.
Right. As long as you're an alcoholic in recovery, then it's okay. Right.
Right.
Then it's okay. You know, it's funny that you say this because I was raised, I didn't drink consistently until I was like in my early 30s. And my mom, who was like preaching moderation, never drank.
Mm.
It was a spiritual thing. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. Like every, you know, every function we ever went to was like, why aren't you drinking? What's the matter? And you know, it was truly just it was a spiritual choice at the time. But it was really easier in a lot of senses to just tell people, oh, you know, me and alcohol don't get along, and let them think, well, okay, she's in recovery.
Right.
Because then they would leave me alone.
Right. We're all using the same method.
Right. Which it just goes to like show, you know, like if you're doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't, you know, you can't, the messaging is so intense. Convoluted. In both directions. Yes. Right. You know, just the judgment of what we put in our bodies is constant no matter what we're doing. You don't drink, you're uptight. You drink too much, you're an alcoholic.
Right.
You know, or you drink a lot, you're an alcoholic. Yeah, I mean, and then I've seen it with junk food. Like people, you know, if you have junk food in your house, like people are like, oh, you eat that? How could you put that in your body?
You know? Right.
So much judgment. And then like, you know, if I don't have any junk food and it's like, you know, all I have in my refrigerator is vegetables, people are like, are you okay? Do we need to,
you know? Something's wrong with you. Where's the cookies?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It doesn't matter what I have. So, you know, in the end, I think this is just another reminder, paying attention to our own selves and how we feel and what makes us feel good.
There's I believe there's a certain amount of strength to be able to do that. I've taken it, and it's funny, and I'll, you know, I'm a member of the Al-Anon family groups, due to being raised by alcoholics. And, one of the most important lessons that I learned from Al-Anon is to mind your own business. And I didn't realize like how judgy I was of everybody and everything, you know, oh, you're wearing that shirt, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, is that a concern of yours? Is that affecting your life? You know, where does that matter in stuff, right? In the world as we know it, like, how does your opinion mean anything? And so in practice, because now it's been, I think, almost 7 years, in practicing that, like, one, I have tremendous amounts of time. Because I'm not sitting around judging people. And two, yeah, like it's also allowed me to create a boundary for myself, you know, where I turn around and say, you know, that's none of your business. And, I guess my hope is that, you know, people don't wait 50 some odd years to, you know, to set a boundary for themselves and, you know, and saying like, screw you, I can eat the cake if I want to, and, you know, or whatever. And of course, you know, again, because I'm on social media, there's some things I see, like, LaToya Snell is a marathoner and she's done like ultras and all this other stuff, and she's heavy. And she literally talks about doing the, you know, New York City marathon and having people boo her and say that she had no business being out there. And I'm like, dude, you're standing on the side and you're giving shit to somebody who's actually in, you know, cause one, you have to qualify. So I'm not sure if you're aware of, you know, the mental or the physical feat that you have to do to run a marathon, right? Cause it's
mental,
not easy.
Physical. I mean, right. If you ask me, that is definitely mentally taxing as well.
But just the idea of like, oh, then I'm going to sit on the side and give you shit,
right?
You know, and it's like, where are we, you know, and this is obviously a very huge topic, but it's like in our society, like we have given ourselves license to insert ourselves into other people's lives. Now, if I knew her personally and she was like, oh, I got this wrong, and, you know, whatever, and I'm trying to fight this, and, you know, then maybe we'd have a conversation. But for me to go to a complete stranger and think that I have license to judge you out loud, or I don't know if I'm, you know, if the person was doing it for a laugh or if they were just actually believing like she had no business being out there and not knowing, like, again, you know, how you have to qualify for something like that. Like, they don't just open up the marathon to everybody else. Like, you have to run a certain time.
Well, and what bugs me about that too is there we get into the you can't win scenario, right? Because if she was sitting at home with, you know, there would be tons of fatphobic comments saying, you know, you should get your ass up and go run a marathon.
Run around the block or whatever.
Go get some exercise. And here is a heavy woman participating in exercise and she's getting the opposite message. Go back home. You know, right. Like, so you can't win, you know, like this system is not set up to win in. And I think it's just, yeah, like mind your own business, right? Or just even just like just giving ourselves the opportunity to notice when we're making judgments, because that's also mm-hmm. automatic, you know? We all like we're taught to judge based on like, you know,
my mother
supremacist, capitalist values, like patriarchal values, right? Because right. These systems are in our head all the time. We're constantly making these judgments. So then just giving ourselves at least a minute to be like, oh, that was a judgment. And it was based in a lot of things that aren't actually probably, who knows what this person's going through? Who knows what the truth about this is? I don't
right. know. Well, and that's, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, when you're making those judgments, one, you have no idea like what their life has been like or whatever. It could be something physically wrong with somebody. Like, you know, there could be, you know, hormone imbalance or,
thyroid
you know,
issues.
Right. All those types of things. And, you know, it's just mean. And I think that's probably the ultimate, you know, the underlying pain for me is like, damn, you guys are mean. Like, you know, she is not hurting anybody. You know, by being out there and participating in this sport. And in fact, she's, you know, inspiring people like me, because then I go, oh, maybe I can give it a try. Not really, because that's why I never was going to go for a full Ironman, because I was like, nah, I ain't doing a marathon. But at least inspire me to go work out or, you know, to do whatever and know, you know, that, there are other people like me out there, so then I can go do something and I don't have to be, you know, rail thin and, you
know. There is no end goal body, you know, like there is,
going back to the St. Bernard and Chihuahua.
Yes. I want to live in a world where there is no, like you go to work out to feel good. And there is no shape in your head that you feel is going to be more worthy and more valuable and more like deserving of love.
Right. Well, and that's, and ultimately, right. That's what it comes down to is, you know, self-love, right. Is that, and being in touch, right. Like, so if I'm in touch with myself, I know what feels good. And then through that, then I'm loving myself. Right. And I'm not going to be on the treadmill for 5 hours unless that feels good. Right. There are some people that I see that are out there and they're like going for it. And it's like, God bless you. You know, you're on the road to nowhere, but you know, that's something that feels good to you.
Yeah. When you're really going through a lot of mental distress, I think a lot of exercise can be great. Like mm-hmm. it's super regulating. And I totally right. like, you know, whatever you need to do. I mean, obviously, hopefully you're not doing it, not listening to your body. Right. But yeah, for some folks, you know, like I another family member, right, went through a terrible breakup, and hadn't run in years, decided to start running. And it was the thing that like got her through it. And she ran a lot, she lost a lot of weight. You know, she kind of lost her appetite as well. And there are things in there too, where, you know, should be, I hope that people are giving each other care and taking care of themselves. Yeah. Do what makes you feel good.
Right. Well, and I mean, there, you know, she could have just drank herself out of her depression or into her depression or whatever. Right. And this is what made sense to her was the whole, you know, running piece. And I think that's a big idea too, for people is that, you know, I was watching, so there's this movie on Peacock and it's called Genie, and it's Melissa McCarthy. And so she plays a genie. And so, you know, she hasn't been out of her box in like 2000 years or something like that. And they're walking around and he's the gentleman who rub the box that she came out of. He's like introducing her to all the things that are currently going on, and they go past a gym. And, you know, I can't remember what it was, probably Planet Fitness, because, you know, trying to get their name out there. But anyway, you know, there's somebody running and she's like, I will avenge you. I will free you. She's like, I can't believe this torture is still going on. And I was like, oh, damn. I'm like, that's funny, you know, because there is like this medieval, you know, thinking sometimes around exercise. And I know a lot of people, and I've talked about this before, is like a lot of people view it in such a negative manner. And, you know, there are ways to introduce exercise into your life and not have it be, you know, some medieval torture.
Yeah, that reminds me. I used a long time ago. Okay, this felt like another life. I was a personal trainer at a very small gym in LA. It was really funny that I got into that, because at the interview they were like, so do you even like exercise? And I was like, I mean, I've always wanted to be fit.
And they still hired you?
They still hired me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was like so not my jam. In the end it worked out. I loved my clients and it was fun. It was a very small community. It was a great place to be. You ever maybe shout out to a Tighter You Fitness studio in LA.
Nice.
Steve Zim is a great, great trainer, great, great man. But yeah, so it just makes me think of one of the trainers at the gym. You know, I think at one point I was just talking about how like doing a certain amount of reps or like a certain amount of exercise was just like painful for me and I didn't like it. And one of the trainers were like, you know, you're going to get to a point where you like it. You like the pain. And I was like, what?
That's creepy shit.
Right? I was like, what is, no. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to get to that point. And I mean, you know, like no shade if you do enjoy the pain, but that just wasn't my thing, you know? And it sounds medieval. Like, this is supposed to be health and wellness. How did we get to like no pain, no gain?
Well, yeah. And I think the issue with that is that that's also that polarizing atmosphere, right? Is that either you're running around the gym, you know, throwing up in cans and doing whatever because you're going to have the most amazing body or feel the strongest you've ever felt in your life or whatever. Or not, right? You're sitting on the couch eating a pound of cheese or, you know, whatever floats your boat kind of thing. And there's been attempts, right? Like, I don't know if you remember Curves back in the day, which was like a woman's only gym where you had a circuit, you know, and you just all get on the little circuit and do your thing. And of course, all that died. And some places still have those little circuits, you know. For me, kind of going back to the mind body stuff is really that concept of listening to your body and really knowing. And, you know, for my clients who have chronic pain, there's a conversation about knowing your limit and going up to the limit, because like even in my own chronic pain journey, I made the limit too far. Like I backed off the limit too far, I should say. So like, I don't know, if I do 10 pushups, you know, in my brain, I was going to get a migraine. So then I started off with doing 8. And then I was like, oh, I can only do 6. And then eventually I was like, I'm not doing pushups because I know it's going to give me a migraine. And then my body went, all right, let's go. And then I was like, you're going to get migraine from squats now. You know, like, and then eventually I started, you know, so there was this fear factor of not wanting to exercise because it was going to cause some physical discomfort. And I decided that all the discomfort that I was feeling in my body, regardless of where it was uncomfortable for me. And that I didn't want to feel any discomfort. Mm-hmm. And I think there has to be a better way of, you know, like intuitive fitness.
Intuitive fitness. I love it. I think you just coined a term.
There you go. Like where you do, you know, where you go. Like I had a woman come in and she's had a knee injury and we were workout. And I, you know, eventually was like, okay, I got to go basic level here. And I just brought her to the ground and we did some, you know, tightening exercises, like other things. I'm like, I know that it hurts. I need you to keep moving it, because the reason why it hurts is because it hasn't been moving. And she's like, I hear you. And on a logical level, that makes sense. She's like, but my body is screaming, please God, don't, you know, like I'm going to get hurt. And I said, okay. So we had to find the space to be, for her to be able to do the work. And then the next week she came back and I said, you know, how did the knee react to what we did? And she's like, I'm totally fine. And she's like, and you were right that I just needed to go through it. And then I was able to kind of notch up. And I think that's something that trainers don't quite understand a lot of times, is that it's kind of like teachers, right? Like, oh, I have curriculum I have to follow. And this is what I'm going to keep doing. We're going to keep amping it up. And, but you do have to back down to make sure that everything's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where that stupid no pain, no gain comes from.
Yeah. You know, it, that actually makes me think of trauma healing too. What we do, because so trauma is super painful in a different way. Sometimes we can feel pain in our bodies as well. Mm-hmm. We often feel something in our bodies when we're going through a traumatic experience or reliving trauma. And what we do in trauma healing is something called pendulation, which is we go to the edge of discomfort. We sit with that discomfort a little bit, and then we pendulate back to safety. We go back and then we just keep going. And eventually that edge of discomfort moves a little bit. Right. So yeah, it's not that there's no pain. It's just that, like, you know, you shouldn't be, we gotta learn the difference between like going to the edge of our capacity and like growing from just, you know, going full force into a wall, right? Horrible pain and re-injuring ourselves,
right?
Traumatizing ourselves, let's say, in trauma healing.
So, well, yeah. And trauma is, I mean, there is trauma associated with exercise. I can't even tell you how many people I've dealt with that are like in PE. And as soon as I hear those words, I'm like, oh God, because you know, they're going to tell you some like freaking horrific story about some PE teacher that made them feel less than because they couldn't climb the rope or they couldn't run a mile under a certain amount of time or, you know, whatever. And I guess my question is always like, what the fuck? Like, what are you going to learn? Like, you know, dehumanizing people and, you know, belittling people is not a motivating factor.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my. You brought up PE class and like a flood of memories came back for me. I was like, oh no, don't bring me back to middle school PE.
Yeah. And it's bad. I mean, it's, and I'm serious. Like, you know, I'm talking about 50, you know, year old women, 60 year old women are like, you know, when I was 10 years old in PE, and I'm like, damn, why is that memory holding space in your brain? You know, why do these people need to, you know, talk to you a certain way or whatever to make that a thing? Like, you know, I don't understand, but that was also old school.
Yeah. That was old school for sure. I remember, you know, one of the things that really bothers me about the way, at least that I was taught in PE, was that there was like a standard of amount of fitness everyone was supposed to be able to reach. And they had like one for boys and one for girls. And that was that. Like, it wasn't based on anything else but gender. And maybe your grade, I guess.
Yeah, it was age.
Whatever age you're at. Yeah. And, you know, I was just like, well, I'm really flexible, but I can't do pull-ups, but I feel like shit because I can't do pull-ups. And they're saying I'm supposed to be able to do however many, maybe one. I don't even remember what the bar was, because I was like, well, I'm not going to reach it, so I'm not going to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, why is it that we have this standard that we're all supposed to reach instead of like, let's measure what your body is doing now. And let's see, like, what do you want your body to be able to do? And can we get you there? Or can we get you closer to it?
I think the issue is always time, right? You know, I only have you for how many minutes a day, how many days a week. as, and it's mass production of athletes, right? I mean, you know, the military does it, right? Schools do it. It's that idea of like, how many people can we shove through the system in a period of time and say that they're successful? And then of course we add in, you know, the president's fitness challenge and all that other stuff. You know, again, reinforcing the idea that these are certain levels that you have to hit. You know, one of the things,
Chihuahua should be able to do what a St. Bernard does.
And that St. Bernard can't run a mile.
Right. I'm like, okay, neither of them do what the other one does very well. So I'm just saying.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because in the Army, you know, we had the same chart, right? You know, age and your ability, your gender. And every year, as you got older, the time would go down for how long you would have to run. And every year I would always come in like a few seconds before I was cut off. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, you're talking about like, you know, 7-8 years of active running and doing everything else. And I got getting slower and slower and slower. And what I realized is that, you know, the manner in which I ran, especially as an athlete, you know, in the 80s and 90s, everything was through punishment. You know, you're late, you run, you do this, you run. And so interestingly enough, like there's some trauma around running, you know, and now when I run, I feel like I'm in trouble. It's like, I know better, right? You know,
well, you're in better shape than me because the only reason I ever wanted to run is if a lion was chasing me.
Right. But you'd probably run faster than me, or because I would just run a little bit faster than you so that you would be eaten. You know, I don't know. It's too funny, but you know, it's definitely, you know, and I don't want to belittle like actual trauma. I don't, you know, it's actual trauma, the variations of trauma, right? It's,
yeah, no, trauma. Let's just make a small note here. Trauma is trauma is trauma. What trauma is a biological, psychobiological response to a stimulus. It has nothing to do with what the stimulus was.
Right. Yeah. So, and not to belittle my trauma, but you know, definitely a different trauma, but it's still, you know, it's still affecting me. And so I have to go and decide like, well, one, I've kind of made a decision of just like being done with running because it's just like, you know, there's no need for me to do it. You know, so why would I do it? But part of me is always like dancing on that line of like, is this avoidance or is this a choice? Mm-hmm. Or is this a choice to be avoidant of the activity due to, you know, the mental, I don't know, congregation. I would say there's a lot of people in there that are having conversations about whether or not I should, you know, run and how it should look and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, how fast you should be and what your breathing should be like and all the.
Right. Yeah. The committee is quite active.
I love that. I'm going to start calling it the mental committee.
Yeah. The gremlins, right. There used to be this book that talked about the gremlins. You know, all the little gremlins in your head that are doing mischief and not allowing you to be successful.
Shame gremlins. Yeah. I think Brene Brown talks about that some too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, mine was just like a kid's book or something. It was kind of fun. I used to read it to my daughter talking about not listening to the gremlins, you know, so it was kind of cool. Anyway, this has been a wonderful conversation and I appreciate, you know, it's like a girlfriend chat. Like, we're just kind of going back and like spitting back and forth about, you know,
just spitballing.
Yeah. Yeah. Topics that matter to us. And hopefully my listeners got something from it. And I appreciate your time.
Same to you, Miss Dana. This is the start of a beautiful friendship.
That's awesome.
That movie.
That's good.
Casablanca.
Huh?
Oh, I was quoting. I think I'm quoting Casablanca.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I haven't watched that one in a long time. So is there a way for people to get in touch with you? Do you want them to get in touch with you?
I mean, I'm working for On the Margins. If folks are interested, On the Margins does take private pay as well as various different forms of insurance now. And the best way to get in touch with me is really just by calling the number on the website.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll catch you next time.
Alrighty.